Buffon, and then Ronaldo! Oh! What a goal by Cristiano Ronaldo!
Messi to the near post! Messi to the net! Mamma mia! Lionel!
Romelu Chiesa now. Here's a Honduran. He'll whip it in back to the far post. Elise! Albert Elise! La Panterita! It's a Honduran connection!
This is Soccer Matters, brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. DaspitLaw.com. Here's Glenn Davis.
All right, welcome in everybody to the show tonight. And a big focus tonight will be on the passing of Diego Armando Maradona, who passed recently here at the age of 60, November 25th. And of course, we know him as, well, when we talk about the world of the global nature of football, there are two players that come to mind right away, and it is Diego Armando Maradona, who led Argentina to the 86 World Cup win in dramatic fashion, scored what was considered the goal of the century, and then Pelé. Those are the two. But tonight I'm hoping to get your phone calls here at 512-447-3776. Now, you need to be a big part of the show tonight. We've got a lot of sound from differing people on the passing of Maradona. Without a doubt, it is dark. It makes you feel kind of sad that football lost one of its living, breathing idols in Maradona. If you feel that way, I think most people do. You may have had your Maradona moment, which was, you know, when you saw him play and it just lifted your joy about the game or connected you to the game, or you went out in your backyard and you began to try to duplicate some of his movements with the ball. Good luck on that one, by the way. 512-447-3776. So that's what we want to do tonight is, how did he influence you? How does it feel right now without Diego Maradona alive and in the football world? Or maybe when he retired, you know, you didn't like the off-field stuff and it became different and you separated the two. The 86 World Cup final, without any question, was remarkable. And I think producer Sam Pica, can you play the two back-to-back goal calls? One is the hand of God, and the other is the slalom through five England players, which was called the goal of the century by FIFA.com in 2002. So we're going to play these back-to-back. 86 World Cup quarterfinals, Mexico City, Azteca Stadium. It is Diego Armando Maradona against England in the quarterfinals.
Maradona just walked away from Hoddle then. Maradona, open, Maradona! They're appealing for offside. The ball came back off the foot of Steve Hodge. And Maradona gives Argentina the lead. The England players protesting to the referee. But the little man who started it by walking past Glenn Hoddle, that's where the ball came from Hodge. Maradona had continued the run forward. And the goal is given. What point was he offside? Or was it a use of the hand that England are complaining about?
Maradona puede tocar para Enrique, siempre Maradona es un drible, se va entre tres, siempre Diego, genial, tocó para Valdano, entró Maradona, pasó el gol, 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 gol.
We haven't been able to control the play in midfield the way that Maradona has been able to do. And he's hurting England again here. It's a brilliant run. It's one of the World Cup great goals.
Bueno, lo marcan dos, pisa la pelota Maradona. Arranca por la derecha el genio del fútbol mundial. Y es el tercero a tocar para Borruchaga, siempre Maradona. Genio, ta.
Cuando yo lo veo dudar a Fenwick, le tiro la pelota adelante, se la tiro a él Cuando se la tiro adelante, él me quiere meter la mano. Pero yo venía a 100 por hora. A mí no me paraba nadie. Cuando voy a patear, lo veo a Shilton que me tapa todo el arco. Cuando voy a patear, veo que Shilton sale así todo, todo, todo el arco me tapaba. Entonces la amago, la juego cortito.
So you heard the goal calls, the goal of the century there. You heard it in English and Spanish. And that is the passion that Diego Maradona elicited from people around the world. Now, look, he was deified in Argentina. I don't think there's any question about that. He had to live up to being a god. Even his ex-teammates like Jorge Valdano, who he won the World Cup with, claimed that, you know, it was never easy for this guy. This guy had a tough life in a lot of ways. And I know maybe some people will think differently when I say that, but how do you live up to that? And there's no doubt he loved the adulation as well. 512-447-3776. Your thoughts on Diego Maradona, passed away at 60 years of age, along with Pelé. Always the battle goes on between those two players as who's the greatest ever in the history of the game. That second goal against England, in that game, two of the most indelible goals in the history of the World Cup. One, where Maradona is called a cheat, the hand of God. You could see the face of Peter Shilton. By the way, the back pass was from Steve Hodge, which was a nightmare back pass. Steve Hodge is the man who got Maradona's jersey after the game. He asked for it and got it. And then you saw and heard the call of that incredible slaloming goal where he races and changes direction and he's making people fumble all over themselves and trip all over themselves. And then slots it past Peter Shilton, which was called the goal of the century. Those were the types of runs that I loved from him, where he's almost like a downhill skier and he's slaloming, and he's changing direction. And never did I see a guy, I'm not sure if I'm going to say never, but when you watched him and how just relaxed he was with the ball. Now you think about when you go out and juggle a soccer ball, sometimes you tense up. This ball was one with this man. This was the passion for football. This was the love of the game that this guy played with. All right, let's go to the phone lines. We'll start it off with John. John, what's on your mind?
Hey, Glenn, thanks for taking the call. You know, it's interesting you bring up Maradona and memories and all this. What I think what I take from it, and obviously a lot of the callers may not necessarily be contemporaries, maybe they were probably too little to remember, but with the advent of YouTube and everything, I think it's fair to say that you can get to see the greatest and the worst of Maradona. But one thing that I do remember is how physical the game was back in those days. And all you have to do is look at some of those games and just see how much Maradona was fouled. And how brutal, and how he would just get back up and just play. And you know, I know sometimes we talk about who's the greatest, who's not the greatest. But you know, Messi and Ronaldo will obviously be up there on the pantheon. But I think there's something to be said, and you're somewhat of a contemporary because you played during those time here in the States. And you know, the game was so physical, and you wonder how much has that taken its toll on him, ultimately, and how much greater he could have been?
Well, that's one way to look at it, but you can also factor in, and I would say this, John, you would factor in simply that his achievements occurred during that time, where a foul was defined very differently than it is now. And I would say the same thing for Johan Cruyff, maybe in some ways Pelé, as well. It was different. He played on waterlogged fields. You look at some of the footage from when he was at Napoli and took them to great heights in Italy, winning two Serie A titles, and the conditions he was playing under. Plus, Neapolitans, they would not let this guy breathe. I mean, he went out in public, and there are people, you know, instantly around this guy. He couldn't breathe, physically touching him, touching the golden boy, the El Pibe de Oro. I saw one piece, and I highly recommend this too. And I don't know if you saw the documentary Diego Maradona on HBO. You can get it on YouTube TV. I highly recommend you watching this. Some of this footage is remarkable. There's a scene in there where somebody runs up and, you know, it's a guy in Italy, and he kisses him on the lips, and Maradona gets all, you know, teed off, and he says, "Hey, not on the lips, you know, like, you know, I'm conceding you can kiss me on the cheek, but, you know, I can't have you kissing me on the lips." So, you know, it is remarkable. Those time periods were very, very different. But, man, you know, I watched the re-air of that England and Argentina quarterfinal this past weekend. And every time he got the ball, I mean, nearly every time, it was magical. And you could just tell that this guy was playing in a stratosphere way above everybody else out there. No question at all. Anything else, John?
No, give me your thoughts on what you thought of Maradona when he was at his peak in Europe. And you were stateside. Did you get to see a lot of him? I mean,
yeah, you didn't get to see it as much because in those times it wasn't on TV as much. So late, you know, what he was at Napoli like 84 to 91. So you didn't really, I mean, Rai TV, I guess, probably had some of that stuff on, but we didn't get much of that in those time periods, if I remember correctly. And then prior to that, he was at Barcelona. And then, of course, we weren't able to really see him at Argentinos Juniors or Boca Juniors when he was developing his career. But we've all gone and seen the highlights. I actually have a great story. I was at Giants Stadium so they win the World Cup. Let's see, they won it in 78, and then Argentina came to New York to play the New York Cosmos. Sold out, 70-something thousand people. Argentina beat the Cosmos 1-0. And place is absolutely, you know, we're seeing the World Cup winners, right? And in the second half, they put on this bushy-haired little guy who looks like a fire hydrant who's dribbling all over the place, and that was Diego Maradona. In that game. Now, he did not go to the 78 World Cup. He did go to the 82 World Cup. He didn't go to the 78 World Cup. But he wins it in 86. And, you know, just absolute remarkable player. Change of direction, stop on a dime, ridiculous technique. Everything stuck to him. I mean, any balls that came towards his feet, he brought them down so quickly. The vision. I mentioned change of direction. Look, even in the final, when, you know, they beat Belgium in the semis, then they get to the final against West Germany at the time. And even in the final, when the Germans are basically trying to mark him out of the game with two players, he still finds a way to produce the telling moment that leads to the World Cup winning goal. I think it was Burruchaga who got the winner. It was either Burruchaga or Jorge Valdano. I think it was Burruchaga. Anyway, he produces a sublime moment, you know, to win him the game. So good stuff there. John, thank you so much for the phone call tonight. All right. So we'll make that 512-447-3776. 512-447-3776. Anybody else have any comments on Diego Maradona? Here is something that came from Pelé, and Pelé said this about Maradona. He described Maradona as a friend and said he hoped that he would play together in the sky one day with Diego Maradona. That came from Pelé, and of course, those two are the two that in this day and age people are talking about as the two greatest players ever. Carlos Bilardo, who was his coach, said, quote, "Argentine players should live life with the ball permanently at their feet." This is what he said to the national team. So at a team meal, Maradona apparently juggled the ball from his hotel room all the way into the meal, came into the dining room, sat down in the dining room, still juggling the ball, by the way, and then grabbed a piece of bread and started eating some bread. It's one of the legendary stories about him. Then there was the Argentine president, Alberto Fernandez, said this after the passing of Maradona. He said, "You looked to the top. You took us to the top of the world. You made us immensely happy. You were the greatest of all. Thanks for having us. No, thanks for having existed, Diego." That was the Argentine president, Alberto Fernandez. All right, let's go to some sound from Pep Guardiola on Diego Armando Maradona. Guardiola never played with him at Barcelona, as Maradona was a bit older, and Maradona had moved on from Barcelona in 84 to where it all really came together for him at Napoli. But here's Pep Guardiola, currently the Man City manager, on Diego Armando Maradona.
It was a banner in Argentina, I think, 1 year ago. I read it that... He said, "No matter what you have done with your life, Diego, it matter what you have done for our lives." I think expressed perfectly what this guy gave us, the man of joy and the pleasure and his commitment for his the world football. He made the world football better. His performance in, you know, what he had done in Napoli, a team for the South, and especially the national team in Argentina, Mexico, 86. Was something unbelievable, and yeah, rest in peace, and in behalf of Manchester City, of course, a big hug for all his family. Well, I was a little boy with my dad, sometimes came to Barcelona to see Maradona playing football. It was incredible. Unfortunately, had an blow, a great injury, big injury. And his period was short. When I arrived to the academy, he lives to Napoli. I was not in the locker room with him, but all the people who was with him in the locker rooms express how his generosity, his thinking for all of them, defend the position for the to make a better world football, and on the pitch was something unique for one or two generations. Was a player like I said, wow, what a player is playing right now. So it's a sad news. We knew that it was not perfect, and. Yeah, a big hug for all his family.
So that was Pep Guardiola talking about Diego Maradona. Of course, Guardiola was at Barcelona for many years. Maradona was only there from 82 to 84, had some injury problems, 36 appearances, 22 goals at Barcelona. By the way, he always said he didn't like the idiosyncrasies of the Catalan people. That's one of the things he said about his time in Barcelona. But remember, 84 to 91, he went to Napoli, he won two titles, and became just a god in Naples. It's incredible if you watch the documentary. All right, we're going to take a break. Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin, Texas, is always brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. A big thank you to John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm, the presenting sponsors of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97, on the Horn FM. Tomorrow night it's ESPN 97.5. Jonathan's firm, personal injury attorneys. You get in an accident, car, boat, motorcycle. You might drive an 18-wheeler or work in a refinery. You might work in construction. Call the Daspit Law Firm. Daspit Law Firm in Austin, 512-865-6710. DaspitLawAustin.com. We take a break. Apparently there was a Miguel Layún sighting in the Austin area, or maybe San Marcos. Anybody know anything about that? 512-447-3776, the number to call in. All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin, Texas. As we roll on, again, the number to call in. We're doing a lot of Maradona talk tonight here is 512-447-3776. You can hit me up on Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock. You can go over to Instagram, Glenn Davis Sock. And, of course, glendavissoccer.com. By the way, Los Verdes has put out a photo of Miguel Layún, who is either shopping, but he's in Austin, Texas, apparently. Unless I'm being fooled here. Looks pretty legit from Los Verdes. So I don't think Los Verdes would be joking around with that anyway. If anybody wants to clarify that, 512-447-3776. Facebook Soccer Matters as well. The show is always presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Let's continue on with some of the testimony and thoughts that have come out from some of the greats in the world of soccer. Let's go with Jürgen Klinsmann, the former U.S. national team coach and the German national team striker, on Diego Maradona.
And it was like getting lessons from a master artist. You know, I played a European Cup final against him. I played with Germany, Argentina in the 90 World Cup final against him, where we had to man mark him to kind of keep him under control. He was just full of creativity. He was just inventful. He was just, you never knew what he was doing the next moment. And he got so much stick. He was continuously fouled, hammered by defenders, by midfielders. So everybody was chasing him. And he always found solutions. Maradona was a genius in finding solutions on the field. The goals that he scored were so creative, were just, it's just unique. He was just unique.
Found solutions, and that goes to the phone call we got earlier about John and that time period when he played the game. And, you know, the definition of a foul was completely different than what the definition of a foul is today. I mean, you could brutalize people back then and get away with it, quite frankly, because the game was so different. How about a bit from Jurgen Klopp now, the coach of Liverpool?
The best through my lifetime, which I watched most often. That's maybe not right anymore because I saw Cristiano and Lionel as well now a lot of time. But during my own playing career, he was the standout player. And his life, I think, shows how nice life can be when you are a world-class footballer and how difficult it can be as well. So he was a very, very impressive figure. And I had told already, I'd met him once, which is for a player. It was not a player anymore, but for a player of my level, which I was like meeting the Pope, to be honest. And that's was really, really special. So I football will miss him. I will miss him, and you can see with all the reactions all over the world, if we would have shown our love for him without having to have a selfie, just if we would have shown him the respect he deserves while he was still alive, I think we could have helped him.
Tremendous off-field problems for Diego Maradona with cocaine abuse and alcohol. And in the documentary, it shows how this begins to creep into his life. And it's a part of the whole playing at Napoli and being deified by the fans of Napoli. How the Camorra comes and becomes involved, which is criminal syndicate there. Women, cocaine, those guys are bringing that to him anytime he wants it. And he goes through these cleansing periods where, you know, he parties like crazy after the games. And then he has 3 or 4 days of this cleansing thing. And they show footage of him with his trainer, who was very, very close to him and probably knew him better than others. He said there were two people. There was Diego and then there was Maradona. And then he'd push himself to the limits, you know, cleansing his system as best he could to prepare then for the weekend. And then he'd go out and do more damage again and, you know, win games, score goals, win 2 Serie A titles, which made, the people in this part of Italy so happy, going up against the giants like Milan and Juventus, that Diego Maradona became godlike. And, can only imagine how anyone handles that type of thing. Let's move on. Let's go to Gary Lineker, who was on the field that day in that quarterfinal in 86 at Azteca Stadium against Argentina. He scored the goal that made it 2-1, and England was really kind of knocking on the door a bit there at that point. But here's Gary Lineker on Diego Maradona.
Having spent the time that I did with him, he's so revered. He's worshipped in Argentina. He constantly had a huge entourage around him. And I went to see a game, and I'll never forget it, see Boca Juniors play. And it was, he had his own little box there, and I went with his family. And he's standing there, and the atmosphere was unbelievable at this game. And his family, one of his daughters was literally holding him, and he's screaming over the balcony, holding him so he wouldn't actually fall off. I mean, he had such an incredible passion for the game. I never thought in my lifetime that I would see anyone come remotely close to Diego in terms of ability with a football. I think we've seen Messi, who's very similar in many ways. Obviously, Argentinian, diminutive, brilliant left foot.
Let's hear. That was Gary Lineker, who played for England on that day in 86. He's a great commentator now. Let's go to Mauricio Pochettino, who knows where he's going to end up next. Manchester United.
It was an amazing time. I was so lucky, you know, to be a kid dreaming with Diego, and one day to this dreaming become true. I shared with Diego in Newell's Old Boys during 6 months, and was so lucky that the coach say, "Okay, Mauricio, you go on the room, and you are going to share the room with Diego." And that was one of my best experiences in football. And then to understand that the bigger thing is not his talent, it's how he is, his human being, his human value, principle, that maybe sometimes is wrong. People that doesn't know him maybe can talk because of the image that maybe you can get from TV or acts that maybe he doesn't help himself, you know, that he's doing. But I think in the face-to-face, inside to the room, to the bedroom, or in private rooms with a teammate, I think he's the most special man, and of course, one of the most special, player that I share with.
Newell's Old Boys, Maradona in his senior career there, 93-94. Only played 5 games there, then went back for 2 years to Boca Juniors for a second time, played 30 times there, 7 goals. So in 491 games, and this may not be totally accurate, 259 goals, and he won the Under-20 World Cup with Argentina as well. He was born in a shanty town, basically. Place called Esquina, near a river, and then his family left Esquina and settled in Buenos Aires. At the age of 3, got his first soccer ball, and was discovered as a very young boy at 8, and played for a team called the Little Onions, which was part of the Argentinos Juniors. Let's go to Jose Mourinho had something to say about Diego Maradona.
You know, there is Maradona and there is Diego. Maradona, I don't need to speak about because the world knows and nobody will forget. Diego is different. The people that are the big friends of him, the people that share with him dressing rooms and colleagues, and these guys are privileged because I can say he was a good friend of mine, but my contacts with him were telephone, and we met, of course, a few times. And he was a big heart, and that's the guy I miss because his football, we can find every time we miss his football, we can find. We Google, we will find. But Diego, no, and I spend the day today telling stories to my guys about him and the time we spent together, and that's the guy I miss. And I especially miss the phone call that was always arriving after defeats and never after victories. He knew that after victories I don't need phone calls. He knew that in difficult moments he was always there. And he was always saying, after defeats and in difficult moments, he was always saying, "Mo, don't forget you are the best." and it was always with this kind of approach. So I miss Diego.
The Uruguayan writer, the late Eduardo Galeano, said, quote, "Maradona was the most human of the gods." And as we know, we are all imperfect as humans. There is no question about that. Maradona has his imperfections. We're going to take a break. When we come back, the final segment is going to be with the University of Maryland head coach Sasho Sarofsky, talking about the potential of NCAA college soccer becoming a two-sport or two-semester sport, something he's been working on for quite some time. Some good stuff tonight on Diego Maradona. We'll come back. We have more on Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin, Texas, presented by Daspit Law Firm. John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm is DaspitLawAustin.com. You can reach them at 512-865-6710, 512-865-6710. They are bilingual. You get in an accident, car, motorcycle, bike, DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. To the break with the Black Crows and Remedy. Final segment on Soccer Matters here on the Horn in Austin, Texas. Again, a reminder for our presenting sponsors, John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. It's DaspitLawAustin.com, 512-865-6710. They are bilingual. You get in a car accident, boat, motorcycle, John and his firm are going to work for you 24-7. John Daspit, DaspitLawAustin.com. Again, 512-865-6710. They will cover your case. They will work for you 24-7. A couple of things to remind you. Tomorrow night, Seattle and FC Dallas in Major League Soccer playoffs. Wednesday, Sporting Kansas City and Minnesota will be involved. And then also you've got Chivas and León in Liga MX. Thursday, Cruz Azul and UNAM Pumas. And then on Saturday, it'll be León and Guadalajara in the second leg at León, and then Pumas at home at the Olympic Stadium against Cruz Azul in Mexico City. Final guest of the night, yeah, he has done tremendous work for the college game in this country. He has fought very hard to get forward what is making men's soccer a two-semester sport. He's also hoping that the women will jump on board. Here's my interview with the University of Maryland head coach who's won a couple of national titles, Sasho Sarofsky. Sasho, how are you?
I'm great, Glenn. Great to be with you, my friend.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show. And I know COVID's posed a lot of problems for college and the college game, and really just want to kind of get your take on how it's gone so far this year. What are the plans for NCAA soccer in the spring? And just kind of give you a minute or two here to kind of get us up to date.
Well, as most of your viewers or listeners will know, all of the college fall sports got canceled late this summer. On the eve of a preseason, we were told there's going to be no college fall sports, at least in the Big Ten. There was a few conferences that played American football, college football, and the ACC and some of the Southern SEC, Big 12, all continued to play, and they played men's and women's soccer, actually. But the 90% of the college soccer programs on both the men's and women's side had their fall seasons postponed. And now the NCAA announced in mid-September that we will have a spring NCAA championship, which we're delighted with. And that championship looks like it's set to start on February 3rd and culminate with a College Cup in Cary, North Carolina, between May 13th and the 17th. And interestingly, both the men's and women's college cups will be at the same location between May 13th and 17th. So we're kind of excited about that. Excited to maybe have a national championship in good weather. And hopefully at that point, we have a vaccine and maybe we get some fans in the stands.
Yeah, so that's Cary, North Carolina. That's a great choice for the national championships and it's always been a great spot. Tell me a little bit about how this affects recruiting now, because you may have some players who want to extend their college career. I think that gets a little nebulous for some people.
Yeah, it's created a lot of anxiety, confusion, uncertainty for the coaches, the players, and the incoming recruits. So when the season got pushed into the spring, the NCAA followed up what they did last year with college spring sports, and virtually every athlete that's playing any college sport this year is going to get an extra year of eligibility. So this entire year, because there'll be shortened seasons, interrupted seasons, and teams will play anywhere from a few games to maybe a full season, the NCAA has unilaterally basically come out and said, this is basically a free year. Now, that sounds great in theory, but it's very complicated. The majority of men's soccer players are on partial scholarships and some are on no scholarships. So a lot of these kids who will maybe get their degree or graduate or look to move on to play professionally or go and get a job, they probably will not take advantage of that additional year. But in some cases, kids will go to grad school and go to different places. So right now there's quite a bit of movement and decisions coaches have to make in terms of roster management. And it's not easy, but it's a good thing the NCAA did really to provide that relief, but it has created some complications, but I think we can work through those.
Yeah. Cause in the case of my nephew, he had his final year in the fall, didn't get to play, and you know, he's going to end up graduating. I don't think he's going to stick around for an extra year because he's going to have his degree and get out into the work world. So very challenging. We're talking to Sasha Sarofsky, the head coach of Maryland. Now, look, you've been a tremendous proponent for the college game. You've been a tremendous proponent of making it a split semester sport where you play in both the fall and spring. So I'm thinking COVID-19 has probably helped this process maybe a little bit.
Well, it's hurt, and I think eventually will help. In the short run, it's hurt the process because we were scheduled for an April 2019 vote on a two-semester model known as the 21st century model. And we had really made so much headway that we were starting to feel like we had the votes to possibly get this passed. And obviously, when the world shut down in mid-March, the Division I Council really pushed all the legislations back. So we rightfully said, let's give us another year. Let's hold off and see where it's at. So just earlier today, I was met with my 21st century committee of the coaching body leaders across the country to really restart the conversation and see if it makes sense to get this back up for a vote in April. I think there's some positive developments in the fact that, for example, the ACC this year is playing the split season model. And we have three major women's conferences are playing the split season model. It's not quite the same spread out and well thought out 21st century model, but I think they're going to show that it can be done and perhaps it should be done. However, there are some economic impacts of the COVID crisis that may make us pause for a little bit longer, because right now there is real financial burden on every single campus. There is furloughs at the NCAA conference offices all over campus, and there is a tightening of the belt. So there is this sort of reduction mode happening, survival mode across a lot of college campuses. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't move forward to 21st century model, and we are going to be working within conferences and the NCAA to see if it makes sense to push this for a vote in April, or maybe we push it back a month or two. But it's a great idea, Glenn. It's for the players. It's for the game. It makes sense. And I am passionate, and I will not let go until the day we get this passed.
No, we know that from you. Now, I just want to bring up like Angela Kelly at Texas. They're excited because they're going to have a spring season.
Yeah.
They got to play a limited Big 12 schedule. Yeah. So in some ways, does this kind of prove or pose as a litmus test maybe for the women's game also to maybe get a little bit more heavily involved in a two-semester 21st century model, as you said?
Yeah, I think so. I think the women have been a little bit behind. They haven't been as proactive as the men looking at this 21st century model. But I do think that, you know, you got some of the most powerful conferences, as you mentioned. Ange at Texas is going to have a chance to experience, you know, playing a championship part of their season in the spring. So they played some games in the fall. I think what most coaches will recognize is if you can space out the time between games to have the proper rest and recovery, to have the proper preparation leading up to a game. I mean, it's wonderful. You know, there's way too many college kids getting hurt and just surviving rather than thriving in that experience. And then the games sometimes don't mirror the quality that they should exhibit. And finally, you know, I'm excited to see what a championship in May looks like. You know, whether we have fans or not, I just am excited to see what that looks like, because I do believe we're going to have a really good championship experience this year. And I think it's going to get a lot more of the women's coaches and players, I think, much more excited about this in time. But whether the women jump on or not, the men are committed to pushing this through. And we will be respectful of a timeline. We'll play it smartly of when we push. But we're going to eventually play over two semesters in college soccer.
Do you have some coaches that are adamant about not wanting to do the split semester? I'm just very curious about what the makeup of that would be. And of course, we're not going to reveal anybody, but does that happen?
No, not really. On the men's side, you know, we've had surveys done for almost 5 years now. We're about 92-95% in favor on the men's side. And I think even the one or two or select coaches that have some reservations, it has a lot to do with maybe their own personal weather conditions or maybe budget conditions. So it's a very sort of, I guess I don't want to use the word narrow, but it's relative to their own world. But really, we've got 95%. I mean, it's hard to get 95% people to agree that the sky is blue, you know, on a sunny day. Yeah,
good point. Very good. That's the smartest thing that'll be said in this interview, I think. No question about it. We're talking to Sasha Sarofsky, the head coach of Maryland, really interested in this. Now look, you mentioned this is the right thing for the players, but this is great for coaches, coaching education, men like yourself that have devoted your life to not only taking players to the highest level that they can possibly go in soccer, but also to prepare them for life. Let's face it, you are a huge mentor to all the young people that come through your program.
You know, Glenn, one of my mentors was Bob Gansler, and Bob Gansler always referred to us coaches as teachers in shorts and t-shirts. And we in college soccer in particularly really understand the role of being teachers and coaches. But we are also, responsible for growing the game. And I've taken it upon myself as one of the leaders is to find a better way. I think it's easy sometimes to get stuck in a way and keep doing it over and over. It doesn't make sure it's right. And we saw an opening about 7 years ago when the NCAA came out and they said, we care about student athlete welfare. And we said, well, if you really care, then we're going to cash in that check. We're going to bring it to the table. And so we've made a lot of progress. And I think right now we're in a good place. We think we have a lot of momentum. We'll get there. I think the women are coming along. I wish they were with us. I think it'll be, we'd be in upper 90, we'd pass it, but it's a slow grind. We'll get there.
Sasha, before I let you go, I just want to take you into you as a coach now, and coaches will have to change now. I mean, it's not about just a little rest and recovery and on to your next game. I mean, now you're going to have more time. Maybe your scouting is going to become different. You have the ability to take specific topics maybe in certain training. I mean, it's going to really be kind of different, won't it?
Oh, different in such a good way, in such a great way. I mean, to really be able to, number one, do things with when you know your players are mentally and physically refreshed and prepared is an amazing thing. The second part is, you know, you're going to have players be able to compete for playing time in training. Right now, we have such a short preseason and games come so fast and furious that a lot of times, you know, if you're not in the starting group at the beginning, it's hard to get into the lineup. We also have players who will take an injury, Glenn, and they won't feel like they have to rush back and play because they might miss four games in a 10-day period. So you have so many positives, but from a tactical preparation, from, you know, you have times now. If you want to maybe, you know, switch into a 3-5-2 out of your 4-3-3 or prepare, you know, how you're going to press, you have some time to really do that, you know, to counter press these things. And a lot of times right now, it's kind of, we're doing it through video. We're just kind of like trying to cram. And now you can actually teach and you can prepare and you can go. And I think I'm excited about it. I know the coaches are, if we get to that point.
Sasha, would it be fair for me to say there were points in your career based on the condensed college schedule where you looked at your team and you were thinking about changing something tactically that might have been a little bit different and included some different things? And then you kind of said, nah, I can't do it at this point. It's just too condensed.
Well, it happened all the time. In fact, you know, we all tried to have at least 1 week in the middle of the year where there was no midweek game. And we kind of look forward to that week. And maybe that was the week that we would incorporate maybe a little bit of a change, a tweak, an adjustment to prepare a team. Because, you know, when you're playing, you know, every Friday, Tuesday, Saturday, you know, with every 3-4 days or Fridays, you just have no time. You're just kind of recovering and you know, you work a lot on the mind at that point to try to get the kids in a good place so they can feel they can succeed. But, you know, you have injuries. You know, I've said this publicly so many times, you know, I feel like I have one of the top programs in college soccer and, you know, we draw a lot of fans to our games, but I feel it's unfair sometimes for fans that come to a lot of the midweek games, or to come to the third game in 7 days or the fourth game in 10 days, because you're not really seeing the best that the players can offer, you know, but you're seeing incredible effort and, you know, just a lot of good things, but it just not, doesn't feel like a really good soccer game. We saw with MLS this year when they had to cram in about a 6 week window where they played almost every 3-4 days, and you can just see that the quality really dropped off. And then now you watch some of the playoff games and there's some time in between, and you see teams that are really well prepared, and it looks and feels like a really good level soccer. And that's what I want for college soccer.
And that's why I'm going to let you go, because we got in about 1 hour and 5 minutes. It all kicks off. 3 games in a row tonight. It's going to be a great night. We appreciate you being on the show as always. What a proponent for the game in this country, and looking at it not from the standpoint of just winning and losing, but from the standpoint of what's best for all involved. Sasho, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me.
That does it for Soccer Matters on the Horn in Austin, Texas, presented by Daspit Law Austin. .com. A big thank you to them, as always, being our presenting sponsors. Also to you for tuning in tonight. Get the podcast of this show at hornfm.com. Big thank you to producer Sam Pica in Austin, producer back in Houston, Victor Ariza. On behalf of the firm, I'm Glenn Davis. Until next Monday night at 7 o'clock Central, you've been listening to Soccer Matters.